Scotty, not only can I hear you, I can see your gray, dreary British summer outside. No, audio will do, because that way I don't have to, you know, I can not have to maintain eye contact with your forehead.
Sounds good. I'm going to turn the video off.
No, I think that you should be required to turn it on, but I'm going to turn my camera off. That way I can make screenshots and then draw on them. Scotty, how are you? It's been precisely 12 years since we last spoke.
It must be close to that. I think it's because you've been gallivanting off around Europe and then getting yourself stuck on random apartment balconies in the rain, haven't you?
That's exactly what happened. Oh, my God. I forgot about that. Well, Scotty, I have nothing technical to discuss, but I can make broad pronouncements about civilization, if you like.
But let's start with broad pronouncements about civilization, and then we'll narrow down into something technical. But let's start with John's view of the world now that he's been idling for 3 months or however long he's been away.
It's the longest time I've honestly taken off, and I can't remember. I mean, it was 3 weeks. I brought my laptop, but I basically used it as a charging station for my phones. It did a world of good, I have to say. It's like, you know, one realizes after a time, it's like, yeah, you've worked pretty hard. I mean, you know, it's easy to say, oh, we don't do anything that's actually hard. It's not like physical labor, but the mental stress is a real thing. And it was weird. It's like, you know, just in the day before I left, I was all fretting about this, that, and the other thing. And after about a day or two, it just kind of like disappeared for a while. And I, you know, got to enjoy a couple different places in Italy. And it was a nice family thing. And, you know, going to Italy is all about kind of the extended family on my wife Viola's side. And all that's great. And, you know, Italy is the land of... of persistent civilization despite all attempts to kill it. And I suppose it's worth bringing up, because there was you can't be in Italy with all this beauty without there being some sadness, because, you know, Viola's uncle died, and that was, you know, it's a sad thing. It was not unexpected, but, you know, that's all the family comes together from as far away as possible. And our foul child, we flew him in from New York, because he hadn't planned on spending time with his fat old man and his mom, but in fact we were all together and it was lovely, and got to see some nice places I'd not been to. So I will spare most of it, other than to say that I got to see some places I'd not been. I'd never been to Venice before, and it's pretty spectacular. And it's like, you know, a place that people kind of understandably avoid, like the plague, because in some ways it's becoming more and resembling more and more the places that have kind of weird cartoonish versions of it, like Las Vegas, or even, you know, Venice Beach in California, or even kind of Lake Merritt in Oakland, California. But it's a very, very different experience if you can be in an apartment where, for somebody who's lived there for decades. And so it's a kind of a different experience. And there was the Biennale, which is the twice yearly art exposition, which is spectacular. You just see some incredible art, and you remember that art definitely moves, and it's nice to be able to see those things. And when you called last time, when you were saying, John, it's time to record, there was a, you know, one of these kind of instant thunderstorms, and where the sky opens up and just drops water everywhere. And the wind is like something where if you've not experienced it before, you think, oh, my God, the world's coming to an end. But if you're a cafe owner on any of the streets there, you can look at the sky, say, yeah, it's coming, and you start kind of hauling people in. And then you learn how to pick up, you know, 6 or 7 chairs that are being swept away. I have some video that are being swept away with, you know, not breaking a sweat, bring them in. You know that's going to last for about an hour or so. So people come inside, and then they go back outside afterwards as if nothing had happened, because nothing had happened. I mean, I think that's part of my point. It's like you learn to observe patterns, whether it's a 15-minute pattern, or you go to a museum and you look at patterns that are going over hundreds and thousands of years. Civilization is there in the little tiny details of everybody's day-to-day life, but then you can look around and see things like buildings that are you know, hundreds and thousands of years old versus America, where it's like, oh my God, this building is 200 years old. Anyway, that's my silly rant for just a few seconds, but it was lovely, and I'm happy to have had the time off. But Scotty, I missed our weekly rantings.
Yeah, it's I've just been sat here crying, basically, because, you know, I've had no one to talk to for 3 weeks, however long it's been. But it's I'm just going to agree with you on Venice. So I think Venice is a place, one of the places in the world that if you are fortunate enough to have the means, everybody should visit at least once. Mm-hmm. Just because it's hard to appreciate until you've actually been there. And again, but it's best to avoid. I mean, you're probably there in the busiest time, actually, so it must have been a nightmare, but there we are.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't. I mean, I think that's the other thing, too, is that, you know, you kind of can observe kind of economic, you know, whatever kind of downturns. And, you know, it's I think most of Europe is, you know, has had a tougher time than the United States in the last 5 years or 4 years or whatever. And they depend. There are cities in Europe that basically have to open themselves up to mass tourism. And it distorts the local market with people buying apartments and kind of taking them off the local markets, turn them into rentals. And then a lot of the things that make life happy for individuals kind of gets destroyed. And it's kind of true. It's like people will leave. People leave Rome for the month of August because it's hot as fuck. And it's like being in an oven and you just go to the seashore or whatever. It's just a normal thing. But then there are plenty of people whose livelihood has to get, you know, squozen into 2-3 months of the high tourism season. And you can see it, and you can see the stress, and there are articles about it. There was an article in the Times about Barcelona that they basically said that it's at the breaking point, but that there are plenty of people whose, you know, livelihood depends on it, and it's an important part of the economy. So then you are kind of slapped in the face of what an amazing privilege it is to visit these places, and you see it from both ends about kind of how disturbing it is for local people's lives, and, you know, what an amazing experience it is for people. You see them, their eyes open up when they have a, you know, taste of ice cream, that taste of fruit, you know, or whatever, have a first tomato that's truly a tomato, and so on and so forth.
Both of which, Italy is an excellent place to do that.
Yep.
If not the best place to do that.
Yep.
Oh, right. Well, I guess if you've had no technical content, then might as well come over to me, and you just have to listen to me waffle on and then pretend that you were interested in anything I had to say.
I would love to do that.
So I'm going to do a good news, bad news thing, I think, this time, John. And we're going to talk a little bit about Swift UI. And, some of this is from me, some of this is from Matt working in the office. But, let's start with the bad news first. Swift UI on the Mac still leaves an awful lot to be desired. And just simple things that should be very simple, like getting a text field to get focus when that view comes up on the Mac, seems to sometimes take days to get working, because it depends on, you know, and the problem seems to be not Swift UI, but the problem seems to be, and I haven't tried this on iOS, actually, in fairness, this way, NS Hosting View. As soon as you put something in NS Hosting View, it doesn't always work properly, which makes translating an app to half Swift UI or some Swift UI in some app kit on the Mac just a little bit painful, and an absolute time suck when it shouldn't necessarily need to be. However, on the other hand, I have been taking some of our Swift UI that we've put into our Mac app over the last 12 months and putting it into an iOS app, and it does, on the whole, just move over. Now, yes, I need to change some of the framing stuff and some of the layout stuff and the odd thing, like, you know, certain types of picker don't work, whatever, but that's limitations. But realistically, taking some, you know, a whole bunch of about a dozen Swift UI screens that contained, you know, a total of about 20, 30 different views in there, just moving them into an iOS app, and they all just worked. And so there we are. That is bad news, good news on Swift UI. For that one there. And so part of me thinks, yeah, this is horrible, and part of me thinks this is lovely.
Well, the conclusion is that you're just going to bail on the Mac app and put all your effort into an iOS app?
Nope. I don't think that's a current option.
Well, as the senior most member on your board of directors, I think I should be able to force that change, shouldn't I?
You should be able to. I mean, there is... There is a perfectly valid question, and we've been having this discussion in the office over the last couple of weeks, that if you were starting Moneywell from scratch today, would you do a Mac app? And the answer is uncertain. There are pros and cons, but it's a difficult one to answer, because yeah, it's the Apple's commitment to the Mac from a developer point of view. It's still not been brilliant the last 5 years, 10 years, and the Mac is becoming less of a pleasant place to live as each release goes on, sadly. Although the hardware is getting better, the OS is getting worse. We're not far off. Remember the old adverts about, the Mac and Mac OS and Microsoft Vista, where the Microsoft Vista kept popping up with the security guards and asking if they had permission. Well, the Mac is getting more and more like that every day. You have Designed for iPad, which is not brilliant, but it does work. So if you're starting today, it would be, I think, for a small team in particular, it would be, and because SwiftUI is definitely not as good on the Mac, it would be a hard call to make, I think.
Well, I don't know. I think you heard it here first. 2025 is the year of Linux on the desktop. I think it's time for you to be in the vanguard of that change.
I think you're right. I think Linux on the desktop is the way forward for everybody, John. So I've actually had the joy of working with Xcode 16.1 beta, actually. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, on the whole, it's pretty good. It seems pretty stable and pretty good. I don't know why, but I have to say the simulator and the debugger seem to launch and connect a lot quicker than they used to. Or maybe that's just because I'm doing something so small no one notices yet. So overall, I'm reasonably pleased with it so far. I'm having the joy of being able to work with iOS 18, 17 and 18. So that's nice, and having to learn all these new things I can now do that I wasn't allowed to do before, which is also revealing and pleasant. So yes, it's quite epic. But I also do realize that I've been working on the Mac for so long that some of my very basic iOS skills are very rusty, and I'm having to look up stuff, particularly around navigation. And I know I'm using SwiftUI, so I'm using Navigation View and everything, which is a bit different from, UI Navigation Controller and everything. But it's, and I'm having to remind myself actually how this darn iOS thing works.
That's so funny.
I don't know when the last time you wrote for the Mac was, but do you think you could sit down and write an app today? Or do you think you'd struggle now?
No, absolutely not. In fact, I don't know. I had it in my mind just for shits and giggles to go back and kind of fire up one of my laptops from 10 years ago and see if I would recognize anything of it, because I've written quite a bit of Mac code, but I think the last Mac app I worked on, definitely for contracting work. And it's been a while. And could I do it again? I think the answer is it has to be yes, because I think both of we've all always had to kind of switch things, and you just realize it takes a while to get into the mindset. I mean, even right now, in moments of boredom, I do like Medium, for example, and so I subscribe to Medium, and I have kind of categories, and one of which is SwiftUI development. So if I'm bored, I'll read something. And you look at some of these articles where they say, and here's the latest SwiftUI way to do whatever tab view creation. I have to work hard to not go into my grumpy old manhood for it, because it's showing the latest and greatest way to do something that in your career you've done 5, 6, 7, 8 times over the last however long you've been working on it. And you can say, and there's a certain amount of arrogance, and it's like, oh, this is wildly better than anything that was ever done in the past. And it's like, in some ways, yes. In some ways, especially when you're still in a transitional state, and we still are. It's fun to have that observation, and it's kind of back to what I was saying earlier. It's like a thing I like about going to Italy is looking at museums and seeing the development of a particular place through waves of different things. And I went to an oddball museum, which talked about the development of an area that's about an hour and a half south of Rome, which was complete swampland. And it was also the home of Mussolini and fascism. So it's kind of, why are we talking about that now? Well, only just because, you know, you have these waves of development and somebody will say the past is all broken and I'm going to remake it and it's going to be great. But, you know, you have to, Rome wasn't built in a day and neither was Swift UI. And I think it helps to sometimes to maintain a certain philosophical attitude while you're going through and struggling with these things and realizing that there's no resting period. It's like if you're going to be writing software, you have to always be prepared to be uncomfortable. And there we go. There's our title. Always be prepared to be uncomfortable.
Sounds like a decent one.
Yeah.
Sounds like a decent one. So you're now fully back to work. Are you... is it after taking however long it has been, 2 or 3 weeks out, are you slotting straight back in? Does it all feel comfortable? Or does even 2 or 3 weeks out come back to a, what the hell was I doing here and how am I going to make this work?
Well, something like that. It's like it's still early, you know, so I haven't had my first meeting of the day, but the first, you know, you catch up on Slack. And funnily enough, Slack has kind of gotten better about, like, if you mark yourself as out and you put a little vacation message, which I did so that people know not to add me to meetings or wonder why I'm not speaking to them. And then just when I was at the airport, there was a transition. So I was like, I was at the airport for a couple hours. And I was even in Frankfurt for a couple hours waiting for a transfer. And there was some issue that the person who was kind of looking after the project I've been working on. So I went to all this trouble. I wrote some really nice documentation, so on and so forth. It was well appreciated. It was useful and so on and so forth. There was some issue somewhere. And I said, you know, this is how to do it. And she said, John, go back to be on vacation. I've got it. It's good. You know, thank you. And it was very sincere and it was good. So now I come back and I'm on the plane and yesterday and I figure, all right, well, I'll start to kind of, you know, try and catch up. And you always have to make this decision. Do you declare Slack message bankruptcy? Because I did it for email. If anybody looks at my phone, they pick up my phone, they see the mail app with like literally like, you know, 400,000 unread messages. Sorry, only 265,000 unread messages.
Yeah, I've seen your phone, John. You are one of those people who are an abomination to life. When it comes to that, it's just like,
oh, right. Yes.
How can you have any, you know, any idea if there are important emails waiting or not waiting when all you've got
there's the key to my success. I assume if it's truly important, they'll find another way to get in touch with me. And if it's not, I mean, in my defense, that's like multiple mailbox for years and years, many of which have kind of subscriptions. I mean, you know, talking back all the way to like whatever the earliest Coco, you know, mail listserv subscriptions, which I kind of couldn't be bothered to figure out how to unsubscribe from, plus the generalized spam problem. And even with text messages, you notice that. So you notice that when you travel and you switch to a SIM and you think, fuck, I don't want to get charged $10 for a day pass because some idiot sent, you know, some automated text or spam comes to me. Mercifully, that's not the case, but I kind of ignore it. And then, you know, you have to make the decision for your kind of personal messages. And when you get back to work, it's kind of the same thing. There are all these little red dots appearing like you have measles on Slack. And you have to figure out, you tap into a thread and then you have like this little toast that appears like, you know, would you like to go back 20 messages or 50 messages? And then you have to decide how many of these things can you ignore because there's, you know, there are automated messages that you as part of a group get tagged on versus individual things versus DMs and so on and so forth. So kind of my order of operations, I look at DMs. Most people don't DM you when they know you're away, so I can't really rely on that. And I am relying on the fact that I have two meetings scheduled today. One is with my manager at 9:30, you know, coming up soon, where, you know, I'm kind of catching you up. And then another one with somebody else saying, it's like, hey, there was an issue that appeared, so we're kind of going over some of the things. Nothing earth-shattering, but it's nice. It's kind of nice to be able to count on colleagues to be able to say, Box, just go away for a couple of weeks and we've got you. And it was very kind. And I've done the same thing for others. So it's kind of, it's nice to have a set of colleagues that are willing and able and understanding that sometimes you just truly need to disconnect.
It is one of the benefits of working for a team, with a team, mm-hmm. and working for the man, that you can take a true vacation. Whereas if you're an indie or your own business, there's never a vacation where you don't check your email or do something else. So I'm glad you had time. But now we look forward to next week hearing all about your traumatic first week back.
It will be terrible, this didn't work
and that didn't work, and how all your really screwy teammates are buggered it all up, and because they can't survive without you and all that sort of stuff.
It's very much like that. There's a famous episode of The Simpsons when the nuclear power plant is acquired by a German company, and so they start to bring some German safety and labor practices to bear, one of which is that they say that people have to go on vacation, and I guess they realize that Homer's never been on vacation, but he's also never worked. Work has been a permanent vacation, so they determine that they send him off for a week and whatever, and they determine that catastrophic failures dropped precipitously when he was gone. So I'm hoping not to see that graph when I meet with my manager.
Oh my word, that would be so amusing. John, we love you as a person, but it's been so much better while you're gone, so please think of something else to do with your life.
We're putting you on permanent assignment outside the company. Yeah. Director of special projects outside the company. Yeah. Director of special external projects.
Something like that. Well, and hopefully next week I'll have more to report on my journey into iOS this week and how it... because, I mean, I have client work that's iOS, but I guess it's partly because I've been doing... I've spoken about many times migration projects and stuff like that. I've been working at, like, a data level and that sort of thing. So you're not necessarily dealing with the architectural flow of an iOS app, or definitely the UI, and you know that I'm not a big fan of UI. Doing UI, I love UI, I don't like doing the UI. It's going to be quite an interesting journey, which I will give you my full report on next week, to how I now feel I am an iOS guru, or how I am going to Linux on the desktop.
Well, with that, I think we should just basically say, Scotty, if people want to vote on what Scotty should do with his life, decide to bail on and to abandon Mac OS in favor of iOS or Linux on the desktop,
I am genuinely interested in people's opinions on the future of Mac OS apps. If you're starting today, not if you have an existing app, if you were starting a Mac app today, would you do a Mac app, or would you do something else? You might choose to do cross-platform and use Electron. I'm talking a native Mac app. You might choose cross-platform and do Electron. You may just say, actually, no, sod it, on the Mac you can just use a web app or whatever it might be. If people have opinions on that, then you can hit me up on Mastodon, where I am MacDevNet@mastodon.social, and I would love to hear your views.
All right.
And John, if people want to say to you, get off your ass and do some work, you lazy bastard, where should they do that?
Well, they should do that on a place where all civil discussion takes place, and that's on the internet, where you can find me as Djembe. That's DJEMBE, like the West African drum, Djembe@mastodon.social. Or if you're a Threads-a-file, you can find me as John Fox. And I look forward to hearing, people's opinions on what I should do with my life.
Maybe I should look at Threads. Do you get many people contact you on Threads?
Not for
this show, but just in general.
No, I mean, I think that basically if you're active on Instagram, chances are you'll find things on Threads. I mean, they're very smart about that. Trickles of people, because basically they took your graph and they basically said that as soon as somebody signs up for Threads, which inevitably most people do, I think, if they're on Instagram actively. I still like Threads.
Cool. Well, it's been nice to speak to you again and hear about your gallivanting away, and look forward to maybe getting a few regular shows in over the next few months, and then
we can
go back to being our slack, lazy selves again.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for listening, whoever is listening this week. For those who for the last 3 weeks have had the time off, congratulations on your success. But whoever's on this week, commiserations on your failure. But we hope we didn't bore you too much with John's holiday photos, vacation photos. As well, we've just done the podcast equivalent of making people sit through your vacation photos, I think. But there we are. But thanks for listening, and until next time.
You take care not to make the same mistakes that led you to having to listen this week. Thank you.